The human history around Lake Tahoe, suggests Scott Langford, dates back literally thousands of years to native people who populated the mountains and the deserts to the east since the end of the last ice age. So the earliest chapter in his recent book, Tahoe Beneath the Surface, recounts the discovery in 1940 of a partially mummified Native American who became known as Spirit Caveman and was eventually found to be the oldest known human in North America.
We're talking about 10,000 years ago. We're talking about the end of the last ice age. And because we have the mats that he was wrapped in, because we have the rabbit skin robes that he was buried in, we know a great deal about those cultures. And they're quite astonishingly sophisticated. Just one example, the weaves in the mats are something that carry forward essentially in an unbroken lineage all the way down to the present day Pyramid Lake Paiutes.
The more modern history of Tahoe, including its quote-unquote discovery by John Fremont in 1844, is that of the whites who both loved and looted it, writes Langford, a professor of English at Foothill College. But even much of that is not widely known today, such as the fact that the lake long carried a very different name.
Until 1940, it was officially named Lake Bigler on California maps. Dear Mr. Bigler was the second elected governor of California. He was a secessionist, and that's the main reason the lake was given his name. It was a signal to the almost half of Californians who wanted to secede that the lake was being named for them. It was like naming the lake Lake Lincoln if you were on the other side of the debate.
Tahoe, the name we know today, Langford says, was not an ancient Indian word, but an invention to clear away that racist heritage. Other chapters in Langford's book detail the systematic maltreatment of Native American tribes who populated the Sierra and the Tahoe Basin, as well as the imported Chinese laborers who built the railroad that bridged and tunneled the mountains to complete the transcontinental linkage. But he also takes special interest in the lake's role in the life and work of such literary figures as Mark Twain, John Steinbeck, Gary Snyder, and Bertrand Russell.
Over and over again, what you've got here is a story where a famous American writer comes to Lake Tahoe at a low point in their career and emerges, well, you could say miraculously or maybe predictably, depending on how you happen to feel about the power of the lake, emerges reinvigorated and ready to take on the world. In that way, as in so many others, American history has been changed and transformed time and again by Lake Tahoe.
Due to a cartographical accident, John Fremont recorded the lake as lying further west than it actually does. Tahoe wound up bisected by the state line when the borders of California and Nevada were drawn. And that, Langford suggests, is the main reason it has survived as we know it today.
If the lake had been entirely the property of one state or the other, somewhere along the way that state would have exploited it completely to its own interests, drained the water one direction or another, built dams that would have destroyed the lakeshore communities that we now have. But since it's part of two states, it always becomes this arm wrestling match that goes on for 100 years, with neither Nevada nor California ever entirely being able to take advantage of the power it has over the lake.
Other chapters in Langford's book deal with such varied figures as John Muir, Frank Sinatra, the Donner Party, and the famed but fictional Cartwright family of the 60s television show Bonanza. I'm Bruce Robinson for KRCB.